Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Here we go with the Tuesday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something new popping up there, hopefully sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with three E's.
All right, well, I'm sure with everything going on, the hour is going to roll along pretty fast here. So let's jump right in. And, you know, Dan's been battling some illness, and his poor little girl got sick as well. So, but he did have a movie to watch, and it ended up being Glory Road. So, Dan, why don't you tell us about what you thought of Glory Road?
All right. Well, just for your, so you're ready when I'm done, I guess the biggest question I have is, can you break down Division 1, 2, and 3 again? Because I, you know me, I don't know the whole college rating system. So I didn't understand that. So, well, first of all, I didn't realize that we accidentally, I don't know if this was just purpose by our listeners or, you know, if it just kind of falls that way, but it is February, and in the United States of America, February, we celebrate Black History Month. Which I did see an interesting meme. It is the shortest month of the year compared to June, which is another month. But I don't know if they got the whole month or if it's just a week. Regardless, I did find that kind of interesting. But whatever, I'm not going to get into any of the political stuff of that. So, you know, obviously it's kind of fallen on a theme where this week was, well, this past weekend was Glory Road, and last week was Remember the Titans. Both were pretty much civil rights kind of go with era type movies. And I mean, I'll be flat out honest with you, Big Jack, Glory Road was just, it was actually an amazing movie. I don't, you know, it, you know, forget race, you know, don't put anything into that. This movie was amazing. And I think the one thing I did wait for, though, knowing that it was in the past, we were talking about Texas, especially a Texas border town. The coach kind of rolls in. He's a girls' high school basketball coach and comes down to this Texas Division I. Again, I don't understand it, but I'm assuming Division I is probably one of the better programs to be in, but they had no money. So the other part of it is he did recruit in like seven African-American players. Back then they called them Negroes, which just killed me when you hear that today. The only thing I didn't understand where they kind of left me off was Hoskins was the coach's name. See, I remember some names. You know I like this movie. He was only told that he had like one or two scholarships, and he brought in seven guys. So I wasn't sure how that all played into it, but I digress. So this movie, you know, really gets working in. You know, you've got the prototypical kind of white staff and the whole white everything and, you know, the black people don't matter kind of crap that was going on back then. And you bring these young men into the basketball training, and this coach is a white coach. For the program they're in, he can't get any of the top, you know, white stars or, you know, kids in recruiting. So he has to go for what he can get, and he goes after all the young black men because essentially he wants to win and he wants to put the best team together. He does, you know, mix it up with, you know, both sides. And I think you had your one token Mexican because you're on a border town, so you got to have one, right? I can say that because I'm Mexican. But, you know, for the whole movie, being, you know, Southern Texas, civil rights, racism was huge, and knowing how racist some Mexicans can be, I was surprised that these young men were able to just walk on and not have so many racial issues going forward. So I kind of, that was the one thing I sat there and waited for throughout the movie. And it does eventually happen. And it's really sad to see that, you know, we as humans, we're treating each other like that, you know, regardless of race. And, you know, I get it. If you don't like someone, you don't like someone. But, you know, the kind of the way they went about it, it's just horrible that this actually was taking place less than 100 years ago. And the ignorance was just so prevalent. But I think, you know, overall, this team got together, and the white kids were definitely accepting of the black kids after time. But I like the fact that, again, the coach, when he coached, it had nothing to do with race. You know, the white kid and the black kid got in a fight. Well, guess what? Just kind of like one of the Army movies, you know, with Charlie Sheen back in the day. The entire team had to run while those two sat around and watched. You know, all the young black men went out and celebrated, came to practice a little hungover and maybe a little drunk still. The entire team had to run. So he really made them a unit. And that's, I think, one of the things when you're watching a sports movie and knowing, you know, just watching him, you know, being experienced in sports for over the last 30 plus years, you have to have a unit. You can't have one star that wins it all. Just ask LeBron James. So you have to have this unit, and he put this unit together and these good kids. And it's just amazing how they kind of come together, you know, really go through and then end up beating a top program so much so that it makes the, you know, the Colonel Sanders of the other team actually open his eyes and realize that, you know, it's okay to let your racism go and, you know, include young black men into, you know, the game of basketball. The only thing I will say, Big Jack, I just thought was kind of humorous was they didn't, you know, coach wouldn't let, you know, the young black men play, quote unquote, their game. And finally they get to a point where he's like, all right, play your game. And all of a sudden it's just within a half, it turns it around and they win. So, you know, I get it. It's a movie. So you can't just, you know, let that play out over, you know, the time it does take in real life. So that part kind of cracked me up a little bit, how, oh, all of a sudden you're going to switch your style and all of a sudden now you're just, you know, that's the kind of stuff that always kills me with Hollywood. But again, it's entertainment. You got to buy, you know, you can't just sit around and drag people in the mud while you're waiting to get to that point. And then, you know, a lot of the moves they were doing in the movie were very modern. So I found that a little over the top, but, you know, again, it adds to the entertainment factor of the movie and lets kids of today watch and kind of relate to what's going on in the movie. All in all, though, Big Jack, and there is the one heartfelt story where the one young man has a bad heart and he finally confesses he's not allowed to play anymore. He's allowed to ride the bench with the team, you know, do everything with the team. And when it comes down to it in the finals, coach brings him in and, you know, after his mom kind of pleaded with him that this will be his last time to ever play again. So this, I think that was one of the parts where you might get a little teary-eyed, but if you do not watch this movie to the end and you do not shed a little bit of a tear, you are one hard mofo. Because, I mean, that really got to me. And I think what got to me the most, though, was the fact that the reception they got after winning and then allowed these young men who came from, you know, all over the country as far as New York. These guys actually stayed in that town in Texas. I think of all the things, you know, the racism aside and all that, the fact that this one year of basketball, this one championship had such an effect on these young men that they stayed in that town for the rest of their lives. I think a couple of them moved out, but I don't know. That was kind of probably the most amazing part of the movie to me is, you know, that definitely would not happen in 2020. So, you know, again, great movie. If you haven't seen it, you have to see it. Don Hoskins, I think, is his name. I don't remember all the players' names. The one I do remember, of course, was Latin, and I think he ended up in the NBA, and that guy was a beast. I'd have been scared of him. but, you know, what did you think? Oh, and I finally have a ranking system, Big Jack. So I came up with this.
Oh, good.
Because at first I thought, you know, oh, the trophies. We have five, you know, kind of trophies, NBA, MLB, that'll kind of, you know, how many you get. But I got one even better. So instead of a thumbs up, I've got three now. So I got they're all popcorn buckets, right? So I've got my small, I got the box, and then the souvenir. So you kind of get the point. Obviously, the souvenir one, when you go to a game, or I don't know if they do this at the movies, but when you go to a basketball game, more so, I don't know about baseball, I don't really buy popcorn there, but, you know, you get the souvenir bucket with the team logo on it, and you spend $18 on a freaking box of souvenir popcorn. Yeah. So this one gets a souvenir popcorn bucket. My highest rating.
Oh, well, that's good. So, yeah, that's good. We finally got one that landed up there. So.
Yeah. Souvenir bucket. So, I mean, you know, what did you think of the movie, I guess, quickly? And then can you explain to me again the division and how that team, maybe at that time period, was in that high division, but was the basketball team was just looked over? I didn't understand that part.
Yeah, well, the divisions are tiered by the size of your school. You know, it depends on what your enrollment is, on what division you end up in. You know, and obviously in Texas, football is king.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that it's a basketball, nobody cares. And you would see that also if you ever get to watch one of the other movies on our list has been The Rookie for a few weeks. That's about a Texas baseball team. So it's quite interesting to see that we get these other odd Texas sports where they almost don't matter because there's football.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, that's how you end up in your division. It depends by the size of your school. You know, just those little odd, you know, intricities, I guess you call it, or however the hell I would pronounce that, you know, is where these teams fall. So, but yeah, you know, this was, you know, I've seen this movie multiple times and I very much enjoy it. The other coach you were talking about from Kentucky happens to be one of the all-time leaders in wins. That was Adolph Rupp. So, in the movie, he's played by John Voight. So that's, you know, that's kind of interesting. The movie was a moneymaker. It was number one in the first week, and it came out. It made $42.9 million on a $30 million budget. So, but yeah, it's, you know, it's a really cool story. You know, to kind of see what these guys went through and how they managed to stick it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's definitely worth a watch. And like you said, you know, David Lattin was by far the best player on the team. He was a first-round pick at the time. Here you go. This is how long ago this was, Dan. They were the San Francisco Warriors.
Yes. That's where it stood out.
When he was drafted by them. So, yeah.
Well, and, you know, one of the other more funny parts of the movie, too, is, and I don't remember exactly which player it was, but I think it was the young kid who came out of Gary, Indiana. You know, he really wasn't listening to the coach. He wasn't, you know, he's kind of screwing around in school. And instead of the coach really getting on him, what did he do? Called his mom, and she came up there and just, yeah, let him have it. So, oddly,
as good as a college team as these guys were, none of them ever really left a mark in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as good as Lattin was in college, he didn't even average 10 points a game in his NBA career.
Wow.
So it's kind of odd how, you know, they made such a good college team. And, you know, and I know, like, I believe Bobby Joe Hill is the actual player's name. I don't know who played him in the movie. He turned down an opportunity to go pro.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, like you said, you know, you know, there's a little recap at the end of the movie, and it's very surprising how many guys stayed in that, you know, that, what was it? Is it El Paso is where the school is based?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's surprising how many guys stuck around there and, you know, became, you know, members of the community and, you know, just kind of stuff that went on. So yeah, it's a, yeah, you know, it's a nice movie. And obviously, you know, Don Haskins went on to be, you know, one of the all-time wins leaders in NCAA basketball. And, you know, he took a few other teams to the tournament. I think at least one other team besides Texas Western. So,
now, you know, kind of just sticking with the NCAA for a second. So you said, you know, as great as they were, you know, the championship that they should have never won, but they won. Now, that's it's just kind of the whole thing was awesome to watch. But how does that team, since they didn't really do much in the NBA, was there a team where the guys actually moved on, kind of like the Fab Five? Because I know we had a group of them that really kind of, you know, became stars, but, you know, there was a couple out of there that just kind of hung around. But was there a championship team, a national championship team that actually – everybody was very successful in the NBA?
You know, off the top of my head, I you know, I can't think of one where they all went on to success. You know, there's a few teams where, you know, multiple guys have managed to have – oh, hang on. There we go. Okay. Yeah, you know, multiple guys have put up, you know, really good or very solid NBA careers. But – you know, it's difficult to have that, you know, just like in the NBA, it's difficult to have two or three great guys on the same team. In college, it's difficult to find, you know, those guys to play together. And the game is a little different. So, you know, you don't need superstars to be successful at the college level. So yeah, it would be rare if we managed to see another team like the 4-5 again. So, but yeah, so there you go. We found a movie Dan really liked. Now, you know, tomorrow we'll let you know what his movies are for this weekend or this coming week, I should say. And don't forget, you have multiple ways to vote. You know, you can just go over to Twitter and vote in the poll, at Sports Time Radio. You can email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com, or don't forget the Facebook page. Just feel free to post whatever movie you think he should watch up there, and, you know, hopefully Dan is able to get to him over the weekend, and we will see how it goes. But, yeah, we'll have three choices for you tomorrow. So there you go. All right, Dan, we got so much going on, I don't even know where the heck to start. But I guess we'll jump in with baseball since, you know, it's what you and I kind of like the most. And I found it interesting that the three-team blockbuster trade ended up breaking down into two different trades. You know, and, you know, originally the deal was set where it was, you know, Mookie Betts and David Price going to the Dodgers. The Red Sox were getting Alex Verdugo and a top 100 prospect, Bruzdar Gaderol. He was coming over from the Twins, and then the Twins in exchange were getting Kenta Maeda. Well, after some, you know, I guess the best way to look at it, Dan, is we're going to call this social media pressure by their fans. The Red Sox magically balked in this deal, and they were able to find a way to question Gradel's medical report. Even though he had Tommy John a couple years ago, he had no injuries last year and actually pitched at the major league level. That managed to get them out of the deal, and it had to be reworked, and it turned out being two deals. And oddly, I think that the Red Sox actually did worse even though they got more players, now they did, it did still end up being Betts and Price going to the Dodgers, along with the, I think it's $45 million to cover part of Price's contract. In return, they still get Alex Verdugo, but then they got a 21-year-old middle infielder by the name of Jeter Downs from the Dodgers, and then they also got a catcher by the name of Connor Wong from the Dodgers. He's 23. Neither of these guys have played above double A, Dan, and the humorous thing, Gratterall was actually ranked in the top 100 prospects. Neither of these guys are ranked. So they went from getting a prospect who looked like they could help them into two guys that we may never see in Red Sox uniforms. And that just seems really stupid on their part. As it worked out for the Twins, they still did get Kenta Maeda along with $10 million in cash from the Dodgers to help make up for his salary. But they end up with Gratterall, who they were really happy to get because if needed be, they might be able to plug him right into Maeda's spot. And they also managed to get a second minor league player by the name of Luke Rayleigh. He's not a prospect. You know, he's kind of I don't even know how you would describe it. He's been a longtime minor leaguer. He's 25 now. Humorously, you know, the concern for Boston was they were being fleeced by the Dodgers. And in the end, I think they got fleeced worse. So what do you think of how the deal ended up turning out? Uh-oh, did we kill Dan or did we lose Dan or did Dan go away? Did you mute yourself? What'd you do? I don't get, why you would kind of run away from a top 100 guy, because he pitched 9 or 10 games for the Twins last year as I believe he was a reliever. There was no injury shown. I mean, even Scott Boras came out and said all his medicals were clean. So it was clear the Red Sox were just, let's call it embarrassed. And they had every right to be. They got hosed not only once, but twice. You're giving up a former MVP and a former Cy Young Award winner. You're getting back a former prospect in Verdugo. At least Gratterall had a rating on him, and he's not far away. So to be in the top 100 and not be far away, because normally you see these top 100 prospects, and they're 18, 19, 20 years old, and they're in Class A, and then some of these guys will just disappear, and you'll never see them again. And you wonder, well, what happened to this guy? He used to be, a top 100 prospect. Well, Gratterall's at like 83 or 87 or something. He is only 21. And, my guess is he may start the year in Triple A, but he's going to be right there if or when or how the Dodgers need him. So, it's interesting that they may be the team that ends up with three serviceable parts out of this deal, where the Twins are obviously going to get a quality starting pitcher in Maeda, and the Red Sox are going to get a guy who used to be a prospect, and again, like I said, two guys we may never see in Red Sox uniforms because they're so far away from being ready. Obviously Boston got what they wanted, and they're getting salary cap relief, which was, the big thing they wanted. They wanted to get under that luxury tax. So they're under and everything's going to be fine. So, I guess they'll be happy with that. But I mean, come on, you gotta, with the ticket prices you're charging those people to show up at games at Fenway, you gotta be better than what you just did. You know, that was just, you know, lack of God only knows what on their part. So, you know, we'll see in the end how it turns out, but I just don't think they did a very good job with the trade either time. You know, I mean, I guess maybe it makes it better because they got more players. So, you know, there you go. You know, you got three players instead of two. You know, you got rid of the guy you were concerned about medically, and you know, I guess that makes you happy. I don't know, but we'll see how it goes. I just don't buy this. You know, if I'm a Red Sox fan, I'm very, and I mean very unhappy with how this deal turned out. I think they were better off the first time. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see how this shakes out. But, you know, then the other, you know, let's call it kind of blowback from this trade is the Dodgers had made a secondary trade contingent on the original Betts deal going through. You know, they had agreed to trade Jock Peterson, Ross Stripling, and a prospect, an outfield prospect by the name of Andy Pages to the Angels for infielder Luis Renifro. And, you know, once there was issues with the Betts deal, you know, that deal actually had to be put on hold. And oddly, Peterson ended up losing an arbitration case to the Dodgers last Friday when it wasn't even sure if he was still going to be a member of the Dodgers. So, but yeah, and then the Angels, for some reason, and I don't understand this one at all, decided to call the deal just completely off. You know, now this deal I thought really helped the Angels, especially for this year. You know, they do have a top outfield prospect, but, you know, by bringing Peterson in, they could bring that prospect along. I believe his first name is actually JoJo. It's JoJo Adell. You know, bringing Peterson in would allow them to not have to run up a lot of pressure on this kid and you know, kind of take their time breaking him in. You know, and obviously pitching-wise, you know, Stripling would fit in nicely to the back of their rotation, which is something they desperately need is starting pitching. And I don't know what the reasoning for it was or how it worked out. But, yeah, the Angels just decided to say no. So I don't know where this kind of puts Peterson and Stripling in with the Dodgers. You know, pitchers and catchers report this week, and it won't be long before regular players report. I you know, how are these guys going to feel walking into a camp where I guess it's kind of obvious you're not going to be there long? So, I you know, I don't know. And, like, now, you know, I'm looking at the Angels' projected lineup, and Brian Goodwin is the projected right fielder. You can't tell me that Peterson isn't an upgrade over Brian Goodwin. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess they're counting on this new playoff rule going in so they can be the seventh or eighth seed and we can actually see Mike Trout in a playoff series.
Yeah, that's next year, not till 20. I thought it was 2022 to anticipate.
Okay, so we still won't see Mike Trout in the playoffs this year because the Angels are just dumb.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they were giving up literally nothing to improve their team at two positions. You know, Renifro would have just been a bench utility player for the Dodgers. I know he's only 23 and maybe he'll have the chance to develop, but you know, the Dodgers are looking at Gavin Lux, and I don't see him replacing Corey Seager at shortstop. So unless he becomes a third baseman when Justin Turner retires, I don't know if there was a full-time job for him in L.A. so I don't get the deal behind the Angels saying, no, we don't want to do this. Do you understand it?
No, because, I mean, you know, real-wise and fantasy-wise, I'm not relying on Brian Goodwin to give me stats or really help move the team. And the biggest thing we've talked about with the Angels having an issue is pitching, starting pitching. You know, I think you bolstered your lineup, your outfield, Peterson, Upton, and Trout. I mean, how can you go wrong? You've got the speed and the youth kind of with Trout and Peterson, but you're going to have so much ground. If you were to have those two guys in right and center, you have so much ground covered with those two alone that it doesn't matter that Upton's a little bit older hanging out there in left field. So that I don't understand. And, you know, Ross Stripling isn't a number one, maybe not even a three yet. But like you said, he would definitely fill out that rotation and give them solid starting pitching. So,
yeah, well, you know, when you look, Stripling is probably an upgrade over Griffin Canning or Patrick Sandoval, who are who are projected at the back of the rotation right now, aren't they? Isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe Joe said no.
Well, what it's looking like here is apparently Angels owner Artie Marino was the one who was unhappy with the delay of the deal, even though it was clear that this deal was dependent on the other deal.
Yeah. Well, and doesn't that, you know, I mean, there's always talks of let's just bring it home for a second. Oh, the Cubs and White Sox will never make a trade because of blah, blah, blah. You know, for whatever reason, whatever BS reason. And then, you know, Han and Theo, sorry, Jed, go out and make the deal to bring, you know, Contreras over here and sending over a really great prospect in right field. It could have been a Cub, which, yeah. But, you know, end of the day, if that deal goes bad, you know, you can't blame either side for that. But if you're both in negotiation and you're about to get there and something's contingent on something else, you kind of sour that relationship based on the fact that you're not that great to do business with. And, I mean, let's be honest. Aside from blockbuster signings, when have the Angels really made great deals with other teams? And let's not even say great deals, but just deals in general. I just feel like we don't have a whole lot of trade movement coming in or out of Los Angeles that would, you know, especially with, you know, your direct competition, the other side of the town, why you would want to sour something like that. You know, the next time the Dodgers have something going together, I would look elsewhere. I would stay awake because now we know Artie's going to get in the middle of it. And if he doesn't like it, well, he's the you know, the West Coast equivalent to Mr. Baltimore Oriole.
Yeah, looking at it here, the last significant trade the Angels made for a starting player was when they acquired Justin Upton from the Tigers. That was in 2017. Anything else they've made has just been really minor, you know, when it comes to adding guys. So
yeah,
that'll kind of tell you what they've been doing.
Well, and not only that, I mean, can you even, you know, in the grand scheme of things, what was going on in 2017 in Detroit? They were just giving guys away. So it was like, hey, you want a trade? Let's make a trade.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously, but, you know, he's still a major piece. You know, I mean, an actual guy. So, you know, he's the last one. But, yeah, I just, you know, and maybe, you know, Artie will get off his soapbox or, you know, he won't be butthurt in a couple weeks and, you know, they can kind of rework this deal. But I feel bad for Jock Peterson because here's a quality player who is kind of stuck now because, you know, the Dodgers just gave a spot away to Mookie Betts.
Mm-hmm.
So what, he becomes a bench player unless they can find somewhere to someplace else to go with him? You know, maybe he
pretty
splits
much
some time with aging Pollock, or, you know, he gets a little action at first base for Max Muncy, but yeah, there's no real role for him. I mean, at least Stripling you can plug back in the bullpen like the Dodgers have used him before. But yeah,
mm-hmm.
Peterson is just the odd man out.
Well, and, you know, obviously, I forget who the GM there is. I don't know if Stan Kasten still, I don't remember if his big mouth is still with the Dodgers or not as a president, but, you know, Jock's still your player, so you want to do what's best for your player. And what would be best, obviously, would be getting him in a deal to put into a contender, or someone to that level. Now, you know, I'm the GM and I come back to Jock and I'm like, hey, we're going to send you back. You know, we finally got the deal going through to Anaheim. Do you even want to go? You know, did that sour it a little bit for you? Do you rather go anywhere but the Angels? Or you just suck it up and say, well, hell, I get to play with Mike Trout.
You know, I think if it's the opportunity to play full time,
mm-hmm.
you would be okay with going. And
yeah.
it's Andrew Friedman, who is president of baseball operations, by the way, there. So, but, yeah, you know. So, you know, yeah, it would seem, you know, if it works out or how it goes, but I just don't know. You know, like I said, I feel bad for the guy. He's a decent player, and you know, it would be nice. And I'm sure, I wonder if the Dodgers are kicking themselves for not making the deal with the White Sox, the couple times the White Sox tried to reach out and get Peterson. So, you know, but, I guess there could be some landing spots. I think he could be a decent fit for the team like the Rangers. I think the problem is he's in his last year of arbitration and he's a free agent next year. So I don't know how much they're going to get in return for him.
I don't know, you know, what you think of this one, but one team that hasn't really done jack all offseason, is there a possibility he could play right in Milwaukee for rent a season? Because they'd be the kind of team that would take him on.
That's not a terrible fit. Let me grab their card here. Well, he would have to play, left, because obviously Christian Yelich plays right field.
Oh, that's right. I was thinking the center fielder.
Well, he was a center fielder originally. Now, you know, they did sign Avisail Garcia, and the plan is to move Ryan Braun to first base. But, you know, Milwaukee is real good about finding guys at bat. And you wonder if maybe he could be that fourth outfielder kind of playing, you know, some left field and playing some first base. So, that could be a possibility there. You also have to wonder if maybe the Cardinals come into play. You know, they didn't do anything really this offseason except let Marcelo Ozuna go. So, you know, that makes their outfield really young. You know, maybe a guy like Peterson could come in and give him a nice lefty power bat, help out there. But I guess we're just going to kind of have to wait and see what the Dodgers decide to do with them.
Yeah, unless they can make a cross-country trade with the good old Mets.
Yeah, you would think Peterson has a pretty good resume. You know, I know he's the biggest knock on him, of course, is he's a big-time strikeout guy, but, you know, in today's game, the question is who isn't. So.
Oh my God. Can you imagine that, Big Jack? Throw him in Anaheim and you've got 600 plus strikeouts a year in the outfield.
But yeah, I mean, you would think, you know, and I mean, obviously, you know, the home run numbers were a little inflated last year for everybody, but he did hit 36. You know, I mean, otherwise he's probably a 25 to 30 homer guy. You know, he's a solid defender. He can play any outfield position in first base. So you got to think there's, you know, there's teams out there. And again, even though this is, you know, his last year, you may be able to get him a little cheap. You know, there could be a contender out there he could really help as that third outfielder or, you know, even fourth outfielder, DH, first baseman kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's another great right fielder that's still hanging out for some freaking reason. Do you think they kind of impede on each other? Of course, is Yasiel.
Well, no, because Peterson can play other positions. You know, where Puig is kind of gotten exclusively a right fielder. You know, and oddly, I saw some movement on an outfielder earlier, but it was Kevin Pillar. And I'm just kind of baffled that there's been no mention of Puig, and we're a couple weeks away from guys reporting. So, I don't know how this, you know, how this is going to shake out for him. Or I kind of forgot Pillar was even out there.
Yeah, I forgot about that too.
And I forgot while I was talking about the Red Sox earlier, they did name Ron Renicki today as their interim manager. So he's just going to move up from bench coach to fill in the role. My guess is he's probably only here the year. So, but yeah, we'll, you know, just more of that fiasco there. And I did see Dan, since I missed you last week, I don't know if you caught this one, but Hunter Pence signed back with the Giants after being away for a year.
Yes, I did see that. I think I'm on the Giants mailing list, so I get a couple. I don't know how I don't have. I don't know how I don't get all of them, but I've got obviously the Cubs. I think it's the ones I bought the tickets through. Cubs, Giants, Brewers. I never bought anything from the Reds, and they give me emails. So.
So yeah, and then you mentioned the Cubs. They made another big signing today, as it's time to bring Jason Kipnis into camp on a minor league deal with an invite to spring training. So add one more infielder to the mix of Nico Horner, Ian Happ, David Bodie, your guy Daniel Descalzo, plus the guys they've signed: Hernan Perez, Carlos Azusa, and Corbin Joseph. So throw Kipnis's name into that mix.
When's the last time any of these guys have pitched, too? Cause...
Well, didn't Hawk pitch in a game a year or two ago?
I think so.
Okay, so there you go.
Hey, can't wait. I'm so upset I'm not going to have the Cubs network.
Yeah, it's weird because there's a lot of people complaining about that, but the way this is shaken out, it might be better for you if you don't have the Cubs network. Yeah. So I am lucky enough to have it though, Dan. I will be able to pick up all those games and be very excited about it.
Now, you know, we talked a little bit about the Angels. We're talking about the Cubs. Did you see the little drama Joe Maddon's starting, where he's claiming regardless of no matter what, he didn't plan on re-signing with the Cubs, and then CEO came back with, well, that's not how it looked to us, but I'm not going to argue with him. Did you kind of catch any of that little drama? I skimmed through both articles, and I think it's just Joe. You know, I think Joe gets the Manny phrase, just Joe being Joe. You know, no one really – I don't know if you really fully buy everything that comes out of his mouth or fully care. So So I don't know. I don't know if it's kind of a low blow, though, kind of a little bit of a low blow after the fact, because you, despite the fact that he's, you know, described as a four-time playoff run manager, they don't put the fact that it's not like a, you know, World Series run manager. It was progressively gone down in the playoffs championship manager. So,
yeah,
you know.
I didn't bother to read it. You know how kind of anti-Joe Madden I became after the years of him getting praise here for what didn't really seem like he did a lot, you know. So I lost interest in him very, very quickly. I didn't bother to read it, so I don't really know or even kind of care what he ended up saying, but you know, that's just me. And he did win a World Series here, barely. I will use the term barely, and I'm not quite sure how much help he actually gave to that team. But, you know, he does have that going for him. But we do have, Dan, the other thing that came out today is Pecota released its predictions again for the season. You know, normally they're extremely low on win totals, but it looks like they may have made an adjustment this year. They only have one team winning over 100 games, and no surprise, it's the Dodgers. They do have the Yankees at 99. Oddly, after really kind of, I'm going to go with insulting them last year, they have the Cubs finishing in second place with, well, they have them at 84.5 wins. So between 84 and 85. But they're another one of these guys that are on the bandwagon. They have the Reds winning the NL Central with both the Cardinals and the Brewers finishing under 500. So are you in on any of that?
I can't say I buy that for a dollar. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not, I don't know, with what the Cubs or what Theo has been doing this offseason, I'm not overly thrilled with it. You know, don't get me wrong. I was definitely into many of the signings that they've done previously. You know, I thought you was a good, great signing. You know, he still has a couple of years to prove that. I thought Chatwood was going to work out well because of, you know, what he did in Colorado. That didn't really work out. But, you know, I just, this whole let me sign as many guys who are almost 40 to minor league deal crap, just, I just can't buy. And I don't know, when you have the talent that you have and you talk about how much you love your players and you back your team, and then you see a kid like Kyle Schwarber who should literally be playing every single day, you know, minus the occasional rest here and there, gets benched because of strictly analytics and he's not allowed to, you know, bat against left-handed pitchers, so I guess you can't, you know, he won't be playing against the Dodgers ever, right? So, I, you know, some of that stuff, it's just, you got to take it all in, and I guess they're all doing numbers, but I like what the Reds are doing. I just don't see them jumping that far up.
Yeah, that'll be a big jump. They do have some other kind of interesting things here. They have the NL East, of course, being very close.
Wrigley.
But they have Mets, Nationals, Braves, and Phillies, with the Phillies actually finishing under 500. Are you surprised that they have the Braves in third place?
No. I mean, I really want to love this team. And, you know, because I was definitely a kid who jumped the wagon and, you know, you could say what you want about me and the kids that do it, but I also had TBS. So I literally watched them every night. So, you know, my bandwagon jumping was a little different than, say, today's Golden State Warrior bandwagon jumps. But, you know, I think this team has a lot of potential. They're just not living up to it.
Yeah, and, you know, the way they have the National League working out, the Nationals and the Cubs would actually be the wild card team. So, and then, you know, out west, they have the Dodgers as the only team over 500. The Padres, Diamondbacks, Rockies, and Giants, they have all finishing under 500.
It's not bad. I mean, I like predictions. I would love for us to do them, but I think for you and I, it's, I don't know. It's just, it's a lot of work. And then, I don't know. You and I would physically go through everything. We wouldn't formulate, you know, put together an algorithm to help have a computer decide for us. So,
yeah, and then the way they have the American League set up, it's the Yankees in the East, the Twins in the Central, and the Astros in the West. But the wild card teams would be the Rays and the Angels, who they have sneaking in by the slimmest margin over the Indians. They do have the White Sox barely over 500. But, yeah, they've got the Angels ahead of the Athletics by two games. You know, maybe I could see the Angels getting into second place, but, man, I have such a hard time buying that team. I don't know if I see this, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you said they have them squeaking by past the Indians, yeah, that's definitely believable because the Indians are going to do everything they can to not win, and, well, their front office, it seems like. And then the players are like, we're not sitting down. You know, we're not moving out of town, Miss Lady. I forgot her name.
And then,
so
wait,
they're
I am a little sorry. Are you a little surprised they have the Red Sox over 500 with everything that's going on with them?
That one's rough. You know, I think they're still a quality team, but at the same point, you know, Sale hasn't really been up to where you want them to be, and losing Price, I still think is a notch against them. And then, you know, the young kid who, despite allegations of their coach cheating, he still puts up great numbers. So, you know, you literally took away the best player on your team, and the heart of your team can't play anymore, Dustin Pedroia. So,
yeah.
I think it's going to be a rough – I'm not saying we're going back to the old days, but I think the Red Sox are going to see a sharp decline, and it's going to continue on for a little longer than just the season, like it's been over the last couple of years where they were at the top and then bombed and then came back again.
Yeah, and they do project the Orioles to be the worst team in baseball, but they don't have them losing 100 games.
Well, that's kind of not believable.
it's interesting.
Yeah. You did bring up the proposal for – I can't remember if they said it would be for 2021 or it wouldn't take effect until after 2021. We'll kind of have to see how it goes. The proposal is, you know, the best team in the league or each side – American League, National League, get a first-round bye, okay? They must have listened to us because I brought this up before. You've always shot it down because you said you can't do byes with baseball. It's a different sport than football. I kind of agree with you, but I kind of always brought up the bye. Introducing more teams, again, something we've talked about for the last, like, 3 or 4 years. But, I mean, anyone can say that because that's just, you know, expanding the playoffs is just kind of a natural progression. So their take on it, and I think I had it much differently, but what they want to do is take the number one wild card winner and then the two other division winners. They would match up against the three other wild card teams and let's just say the National League turns out to be Dodgers, Cubs, and Phillies. So the Dodgers have the best record, Cubs and Phillies have the second. So let's just say the Cubs had the first, you know, the best. So they would get to choose Sunday night of the three bottom teams who they want to play. And then, you know, the Phillies would get to their pick, and then the last team would just get stuck with whoever's left over. I've seen a lot of reactions. I've joined some Facebook groups for Major League Baseball. You know, of course, you still have that old man, you know, telling everyone to get off his lawn. But you do have a lot of people who are willing to accept and kind of move forward with a change like this. But everyone kind of, the consensus I get is that the only thing nobody really likes is the team picking their opponents. So, you know, I don't really care either way. They can pick them, they cannot pick them. I don't really give a crap. You can, you know, everyone could draw straws, you know, do whatever you want. I don't really care. How do you feel about it? What was your take on this proposal?
Yeah, you know, and no surprise here because you mentioned it. The thing I hate the most is the team that gets the best record is going to get 4 or 5 days off to sit around and do nothing and then have to be able to turn it back on and play, which is one of the most difficult things to do in baseball. You know, in football, when you get a week off, it's fantastic. Your guys can sit around. They can heal their injuries. But, you know, when it comes to baseball, you can't flip that switch. It's really a rhythm game. And, you know, imagine if you're going good and you exit the regular season going, you know, 15 for your last 20 at-bats, you got hits. And now you're off for 5 days. You know, you can't replicate it in the cage. You know, I'm sure it would be nice to get your pitcher some rest, but you're going to come into that next series flat as hell, and I think it's going to cost some teams if they were to do it. I wish they could find a way to add more teams without having a team sit out basically a week. But I think picking your opponents is great because imagine the fan uproar if the 2 seed picked a team and that team beat them. Imagine their fans going ape crazy on social media. Well, I can't believe you picked these guys. What were you idiots thinking? Oh, my God. That would be the best thing about it. So,
yeah,
it has some merit. Of course, then my next question goes, are we playing into mid-November? Is that how we work this out?
Yeah, well, and that's the tricky part because baseball is, I think, across 183 days, you know, give or take the 162 games. Yeah, I know what I'm talking about. That number comes from the fact that Big Jack and I were talking about the stupid hold them back for a week kind of stuff for rookies. But, you know, that, like you said, is the interesting part, and that's where I don't think they're thinking this fully through, and this is not going to happen as quickly as they wanted to because, you know, the World Series will no longer be the MLB sport. It'll be like the NFL where the World Series is only hosted in, what, you know, 13, 14 stadiums?
Yeah, you'd have to go somewhere where you're guaranteed to get warm weather. You know, is that how it worked out? I mean, I did like the idea that this first matchup series would be 3 games and the team with the best record would host them all. Home series for them. So I did like that, but I just have to get into this a little more. Twitter, I didn't forget about getting that game. But, you know, that's kind of cool. I mean, how do